Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, results of a study by the Hancock County Child Care Collaborative confirm what most of us already knew, that a shortage of quality, affordable providers in the community is impacting kids, families, and businesses alike, but what to do about it? Also this morning in our Throwback Thursday, why summertime is the perfect opportunity to teach kids important lessons about taking control of their money. And there are tools to help parents do just that. And they're getting a new name, but the mission has not changed. The organization traditionally known as the Boy Scouts are gearing up for a summer full of fun and adventure. We'll tell you what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. Have you been following the story about the presidential ballot in Ohio? This has been in the news for, I guess, a couple of weeks now. Apparently, the Democratic National Convention, where President Biden will officially be nominated for a second term, happens 2 weeks after the deadline to get his name on the Ohio ballot for the election in November. The deadline to put President Biden's name on the ballot is 2 weeks before the actual convention when he will be nominated. Now, everybody knows that President Biden is going to get the nomination. There is no mystery about that, but it's just a matter of timing. And they don't want to file the petitions and all of that to put Biden on the ballot as the official nominee when he is not yet the official nominee. So again, largely it's semantics, but it's a bit of a timing issue. Ohio lawmakers are not yet settled on a plan to make sure to try and fix this. The Ohio House and Senate have proposed separate measures to change the certification deadline for the November election, but neither of those have been passed. The story here goes on to say Ohio rules state that presidential candidates must be certified 90 days prior to Election Day, but Biden won't be officially nominated until 12 days after that deadline because of the date of the National Convention, the Democratic side. Yesterday, Governor DeWine again said that the president will be on the ballot in November, whether it happens through an act by the legislature or by the courts. So apparently it's not going to. And there are people on both sides of the aisle who say, you know, this is a problem. We really need to make sure that the president is on the Ohio ballot. It's not a good look for Ohio if they can't get that straightened out. But anyway, stay tuned. So far, there is still no fix on this. It's just a crazy situation. By the way, speaking of politics, among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day: a new Gallup poll shows that when it comes to the economy, Americans do not have much confidence in President Biden or anyone else, for that matter. Only 38% of U.S. adults have a great deal or a fair amount of confidence in President Biden to make the right decisions when it comes to the economy. Those are the top two choices in the poll. Do you have a great deal of confidence, a fair amount of confidence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And only 38% of U.S. adults felt that way about President Biden. Former President Trump has the most support with respect to the economy, but still only 46% of people feel strongly about former President Trump's ability to make the right decisions about the economy. So it's not exactly an overwhelming mandate. Fed Chair Jerome Powell and both parties in Congress were all under 40% in the survey. Biden's rating of 38% on the economy is the lowest since the final year of George W. Bush's second term, when only 34% had confidence in his handling of the economy. So, interesting. Let's see. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Yesterday, we were talking about that tragic story out of the Ohio State University commencement over the weekend, the woman who apparently jumped to her death from the upper decks of Ohio Stadium. This is the other big story that is coming out of commencement exercises at Ohio State University from this past weekend. Apparently, the commencement speaker has admitted that he took a psychedelic drug while writing his speech. Entrepreneur and Buckeye alum Chris Pan wrote on LinkedIn days before the ceremony that he got help using a mind-altering substance. And apparently it showed, because on Sunday he was booed as he, as part of the speech, he tried to motivate graduates to buy Bitcoin and force them into a sing-along. So it was a rather unusual commencement speech, to say the least. And as some have suspected, yes, he was on some sort of mind-altering substance when he wrote the speech. Let's see. A couple of other items here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Louisiana is at the top of the list that you really don't want to be at the top of. The states where your surgeon is most likely to bungle your operation. An evaluation of adverse action reports by the RP Legal Group has found that Louisiana, Wyoming, Colorado, Oregon, and Oklahoma are the top five states with the highest incident rates in America. Louisiana number one on that list for medical mistakes, which could include operating on the wrong body part or leaving some sort of medical tool inside a patient. And these things, yes, they do happen. And in Louisiana, apparently, they happen more often than any other state. And be advised, Ohio is among the top 10 states for medical blunders. At number 9, in Ohio, it is 20.9 malpractice reports per 100,000 people. I'm not sure if it's per 100,000 people or per 100,000 patients, because that would be somewhat different as compared to the entirety of the population or the number of people who had surgery. But anyway, however they term that, Ohio is number 9 in terms of the top 10 states for medical blunders. Hawaii, on the other hand, had the lowest rate of medical malpractice, followed by New York and Idaho. The good news, if you need surgery in Louisiana, however, despite ranking first, the state has actually seen an 18% decrease in the number of reports filed since 2013. So I'm not sure if that means the doctors are getting better or the patients are just dying. And it's hard to file a claim after you're dead. I'm not sure. But in any event, Louisiana number one. But Ohio number 9. That's a little uncomfortable. And finally, here among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. And this is not going to make you happy. This is not going to make you happy as summertime outdoor grilling season arrives. New research finds that the smell of food cooking is a sign of air pollution. This study from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, measured what they called underappreciated sources of urban air pollution. Underappreciated sources of urban air pollution. Researchers write that if you can smell the food, there is a good chance it is impacting air quality. Now, I read that and I think, what would summertime be without the aroma of people grilling in the backyard, grilling steaks and burgers and whatever else in the neighborhood? I mean, that is one of the things that I look most forward to in the spring and summer, is you're walking around the neighborhood and you can smell folks' backyard grilling, right? But apparently that's a bad thing. Overall, they found that cooking accounts for nearly a quarter of volatile organic compounds in the air. Those are human-made chemicals that are used in making paints and pharmaceuticals. Researchers are still looking at what these results mean for air quality, but the study's lead author says having the data is the first step to making policy decisions, which sounds a bit ominous, right? Now, does that mean that they're going to outlaw outdoor grilling and cooking if neighbors can smell it? Are you in trouble? Are we going to be in trouble if people can smell your burgers and your brats on the grill in the summertime? Well, stay tuned. I don't know. And what about restaurants? I mean, you know, if you go out shopping someplace and you can smell, you know, the restaurants and the food that they're cooking, makes you hungry, makes you want to go to that restaurant. I think restaurants count on that, actually. Is that going to be prohibited? And they're going to have to recapture those smells so that they don't pollute the air. Man, if that's air pollution, I'll take the air pollution. Thank you very much. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Some showers today with a high around 60. A chance of showers tonight, a low around 50. A potential new law in Ohio could make people think twice about not buckling up in their vehicles.
The Office of State Representative John Cross of Finley reports that representative has introduced a bill to make not wearing a seatbelt a primary offense. That means police can stop a vehicle if they see it. Right now, officers must stop a vehicle for another reason before citing a seatbelt violation. In a State of the State address last month, Governor Mike DeWine also called for a primary seatbelt law.
ONN's Clay Gordon reporting. The United Way of Hancock County's Spring Days of Caring is being held this week in Findlay and Hancock County, with around 900 volunteers completing more than 90 projects for 45 agencies. United Way CEO Angela Dabosky says a lot of good comes from each Days of Caring event.
So many good things happen in Hancock County because of volunteerism and collaboration. You can visit the volunteer page at uwhancock.org to learn more.
And she says if you missed out on volunteering for the Spring Days of Caring, the United Way will host a second opportunity to participate in Days of Caring in their fall event in September. Get more details in the story on our website. The City Council in Cleveland is invoking a law passed in 1996 to keep the Browns from moving out of the downtown area.
As the Browns possibly look toward building a new stadium in Brook Park, City Council is making moves that could make that a bit more difficult. It has approved an ordinance that directs the city to enforce what's called the Art Modell Law. And that would make it so the Browns would have to stay in Cleveland proper unless the Haslams get permission to leave or give the city or a group of residents the chance to buy the team.
ONN's Laura Caso reporting. The University of Findlay is now home to approximately 100,000 bees and a new bee club called The Hive. Two UF students founded the club and donated half of their own personal bee collection to the university. Learn more about this new bee club at UF in the story on our website. And remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So now our cover story this morning. Results out here just in the past week. A study by the Hancock County Child Care Collaborative pretty much confirm what many people already knew or at least suspected, that a shortage of quality, affordable child care providers in the community is impacting kids, families, and businesses alike. But, of course, the next big question from this study: what to do about it? We are joined in the studio this morning by Kimberly Bash from the Community Foundation, Stephanie Parsons from the YMCA, Angela Dabosky from the United Way. Ladies, thank you all for joining us here this morning.
Thanks, Chris.
Let's talk a little bit first about the background of the County Child Care Collaborative and the genesis of this study.
Of course. As you said, Chris, I mean, we've known for years that child care is an issue in our community.
Right.
Every meeting that we go to, every coalition conversation, child care is brought up. But we just didn't know exactly what was the state of it. What was the data really telling us about our condition here in Hancock County? A couple years ago, the movement really kind of picked up in Macomb. So very, very quickly through a community collaboration, now in August, a child care facility is going to open up there. And that really got the ball rolling with this the collaborative nature of how we're going to address child care.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, we said, okay, Macomb, that's great. What's the situation countywide? And that's what led to this survey. And United Way kind of led putting that together. And Angela, I don't know if you'd like to speak to that.
Yeah. Well, we know that we have the ability to tap into state research and data, right? Mm-hmm. But how do we localize it?
Yeah.
So we wanted to reach out to both parents and businesses to say, what's important to you? And over 600 people responded to the survey individually, and over 50 businesses did as well. So where are your priorities? What size of a center do you want your child? How big of a problem is the waiting list in our community?
Mm-hmm.
So what we were able to do then in our report is then to pull together data that we know nationally, like statistics of it's predicted over the next year, we're going to lose 130,000 spots in the state of Ohio. That's going to impact Hancock County. So how do we get in front of that and develop ways to make solutions in our community? Because not a lot of people get in it to make millions of dollars.
Right.
So how do we draw them in?
And as Kimberly was alluding to, the results are not necessarily surprising. I'm sure you go into it trying to make sure that you don't have any preconceived notions about what you're going to find. But the results are not surprising. Interesting. You talk about the availability and the affordability, two different questions. If it was just affordability, that would be one thing. If it was just availability, that would be one thing. But you've got an issue with both.
We do. And so you have to look at it kind of holistically. And that's why a collaborative effort is so important. Because some people are going to be better at looking at how do we get new providers into the area. Some people, like the YMCA, have been in our community for a long time, really trying to develop quality programming and work on that affordability thing. So we need that collaborative effort to say, okay, I can take this part. Because it's bigger than just Community Foundation, the Y, or United Way can do.
Mm-hmm.
You take this part, I'll take this part, and let's work together to make something that's cohesive.
Just as almost a bit of a sidebar on this, Stephanie, I know obviously the YMCA has a big expansion project and doing a lot of work on modernizing the facility. The child care part of that is a big component of that.
Like we've been mentioning, we noticed long before that there was a need for a quality, affordable daycare in our community. And so we'll be doing an expansion and breaking ground for a new early learning center. Along with that, it would be a center of excellence. And a center of excellence would allow us to have other child providers to come in and get training within our facility. So we know it's much more, like Angela alluded to, much more than the why. And we want to help. We want to help the community expand the reach.
Yeah. Obviously, it's more than just the why. And it's interesting, Angela, as you were mentioning, responses in this survey came from not just families and individuals, but also from businesses. Clearly, there are wide-ranging implications of this problem.
There are. And I think the stats were like two-thirds of the businesses say that it impacted them greatly, or at least highly highly moderately is not the right word, but hopefully you understand my meaning behind that. So
sure.
It's having an impact in our businesses because when you don't have childcare, and we feel this in our office even. We have a gentleman, when his sitter decides to close the office for the day for childcare, he's stuck.
Yeah.
He can't come to work. So how do we help to create those avenues for people to be
one of the
productive?
One of the other implications here, and I think you mention it the press release on the results of the survey, is that when there aren't high-quality, affordable childcare options available, people will turn to options that may not be suitable for their
whether it's the safety factor or just a quality in terms of the educational offerings that are made available.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're looking at that, making sure that every child has that access. Yeah.
And that's not to disparage the individual who runs daycare in their home, or grandma and grandpa who watch the kids a couple of days a week, or what have you. But there are options that people will end up in that are not necessarily best
situation. Or they may choose not to enter the workforce because of those costs or the lack of availability. And we know that we have workforce, you know, issues, and we need those people in the workforce. So it definitely is a spiraling, you know, effect. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that we've talked a lot about in our collaborative is that this isn't going to change unless we also have a policy component to it. So we'll be looking at, you know, some of those short, long-term kind of policy implications that affect, you know, how things work. Looking, you know, with our local folks, our state folks, our federal folks that have some type of authority over that, how can we work with them to change that?
And that actually leads to the next question, which is really the big question. Okay, we have the survey, we have the data, we know where we are, and we kind of term it a childcare desert. We are certainly not unique in that situation. That's great to know, but what do we do about it? And you talk about creating a comprehensive plan for that.
Yep.
I know, it's a big question. So, you know, where do we start with
We just had a larger stakeholder gathering last week, a lot of energy around that. So I think some of our next steps are going to be in those kind of focus areas of retention, recruitment, policy, and you know, reaching back out to those folks. Where their interests lie, trying to formalize those committees and those action plans in those specific areas, and also to see, okay, who's missing? You know, this was a very, very robust gathering, but we know that there's other people that need to be at the table. So that'll be another next step.
Right. When you're planning something large, you start with, where are we currently? Mm-hmm. And that survey did a great job of saying, here's the full picture. Mm-hmm. And then you take a vision of, where do we want to go? And so the collaborative's vision is, we would like to create a community where we have childcare available for every child and family that needs it. And we don't have that currently. So that's our goal. And now we're breaking it down into pieces that are bite-sized, like Kimberly said, that people can join and bring their skills. So if you have business acumen, and you could help a struggling childcare center to be able to do better in a business kind of way, to make it more affordable, to make it more stable. Bring that expertise to the table. Mm-hmm. If you have a passion for serving children, if you're, you know, a passion for teaching, for educating, for organizing, for if you're a parent that says, I want something better and I know what it looks like from the inside, we need all of those pieces at the table to really have a strong collaborative.
It's a big lift to solve this issue. Do we really believe that we can fix it and get to that point where we have quality, affordable child care for every family that needs it? That's a big lift.
It is a big lift, but you know what? I've seen people in this community do big lifts, and I'm not afraid.
I was going to say, Chris, this is Hancock County. What are you saying?
Right. I'm not afraid to work towards improving it, because we've got our target, but we're doing it in a smart way, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just a pie in the sky kind of dream.
Yeah.
And we have people at the table that are committed to trying to make something happen. We even have other communities that are reaching out to say, what are you doing over there? Mm-hmm. How can we get something in our community? And that's what leaders do.
So what kind of a time frame are we looking at? I mean, this is not something that can be fixed overnight. Is this a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, a 1-year plan? I mean, you know, what kind of time frame are we looking at?
1-year plan. Come on.
I think some of our short term, we've looked at kind of like that 5-year, looking at making, you know, some of those, you know, initial strides within that, because this is systems work. It's messy. It's going to be one step forward, one step back, et cetera, because of all of the different sectors that are involved. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, keeping it on the train tracks, you know, keeping it going. I think the commitment from our partners is there. We have to, what's the low-hanging fruit? Get some success, bite off some of that early, keep people at the table, and hopefully we can start to see some changes in the short term. as well as what's going to take a more longer term time frame.
Well, and as we always say, part of fixing a problem is recognizing what the problem is, yeah. where you are, as you were mentioning, right. Angela. So, again, it's something that we will continually watch moving forward. But interesting results of this study from the Hancock County Child Care Collaborative. We have a link up for more information at our webpage. Again, Kimberly Bash with the Community Foundation, Stephanie Parsons, the YMCA, Angela Dabosky, the United Way. Ladies, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for your interest.
Well, you know, it won't be very long now before the kids be out of school for the summer. And this is a great time to teach young people some great money lessons. I mean, if you think about it, whether your teenager is going to be taking a summer job, getting cash for graduation, right? Or maybe it's younger kids saving up their allowance for a new bike or a trip to Cedar Point or something like that. All of these things provide opportunities to lay the groundwork for young people to take control of their financial decisions. Make good financial decisions. Last May, when this time rolled around, we spoke with Matt Gramata, who is head of family banking at Chase. It is today's Throwback Thursday. Matt, what is a good way for parents to kind of leverage this to start that money conversation?
Well, summer's a great time to do this because it might be your kid's first experience having their own source of money, source of income. So the most important thing to do is it is never too early, and frankly, it's never too late to start these conversations with kids. So here are three quick tips that work for kids of different ages. So first of all, helping your child or a kid in your life understand the difference between wants and needs, right? So, you know, the thing you want, that bike, right, that amusement park trip, these are wants, but what do they need? And this is where, for younger kids, you'll need to make it a little bit more tangible, but it's helpful to talk about how you, the parent, or you, the caregiver, think about needs and what you spend on. Two, budgeting builds confidence. Now, budgeting doesn't have to be a big, fancy, hard thing. You start with that conversation on wants and needs. You discover a thing your kid wants. Now you've got a way to start talking about, okay, how much does that thing cost? How are you going to plan ahead to get that thing? How much do you need to save to get it? What are you going to forego to do that? These are the simple budgeting conversations that make the difference. It's very simple, and you can start right there. Third and final point, show, don't tell. Kids learn by doing. And so if they have a little bit of money coming in, what a great opportunity to use those opportunities to help them save regularly and spend mindfully.
Now, the next question then becomes, what kind of resources can we utilize to sort of help that process along?
You know, when we've talked to parents, can't tell you the number of times we hear, gosh, I want my kid to learn everything they need to know about money, but I don't know that I'm the right person to teach them. Yeah. Right? Like, I didn't learn this stuff in school, et cetera. We hear this all the time. And so we at Chase have developed resources for parents. You do not have to be a Chase customer to have these conversations with your kids. So you can go to chase.com/parents and get all kinds of resources to have conversations about basic budgeting, wants and needs. And also, if your kid's a little bit older, you can find links to budget worksheets or how to improve a credit score. Everything is right there, chase.com/parents.
I was going to ask about that, too, because, again, as we mentioned, one of the big things that happens this time of year when we get into graduation season, a lot of young people are going to be hit with a big influx of cash, gifts for graduation, and so on. So what advice can you share with recent graduates and their parents, but especially speaking to those recent grads, to kind of help them prepare financially to manage that influx of cash, whether they're, you know, going into the quote unquote real world or going on to college, whatever that next step may happen to be?
It's a great question, because graduation is not only a huge milestone, but quite often it comes with a new set of responsibilities. And the temptation to use all of that graduation money right away for something they want, it's tough. It's tough to say no. And so that's where you can rely on, hopefully, the conversations you've been having. And if you haven't, don't worry. You can start now. Start with being mindful about being aware of a budget, planning appropriately for the needs, and you can start talking about what are your needs for, you know, going into the workforce, or if they're going to college, what do those needs look like?
Mm-hmm.
And then being thoughtful about wants. What are those things that they really want, they'd love to spend on, but how do you start a conversation about how they get there mindfully? So they're planning for it, but still have money left over for all the things they need.
Now, you mentioned that a lot of the resources that you have are available whether or not you are a Chase customer in your particular situation. But that being said, there are account options that can help young people succeed in learning these lessons and setting these goals and so on and so forth. Are there not?
There certainly are. And we have spent so much time with parents and kids to learn what works. What we find is there's such differences in the needs of kids by age. So for younger kids, we heard, boy, they want independence. They want to be able to use their own money, and parents want control over it, right? They want the oversight, and they want to protect their kids. So we came up with a product called Chase First Banking. Kids get a debit card. Parents get total control over what and how they spend, and they can receive their allowance through Chase First Banking. They can manage chores, and it's done all through the Chase mobile app, so parents don't need to worry about another place to go, another place to look, all the things right there in the Chase app. And then as the kids age, what we found was most important was giving them a foundation for their future lives. So whether they're in high school, we have high school checking, or heading off to college, we have college checking. These are accounts that have no monthly service fee and offer features like Zelle, so they can pay friends and family directly through their apps and check their balances all from the phone that we know they have in their hands practically 24/7.
Right. I had to kind of chuckle the idea of, you know, just loading up the allowance on the card is sort of like direct deposit for your allowance. My, how different that was from the time that you and I grew up. You know, banking these days online with a lot of these tools is the norm, and young people are certainly comfortable with technology, maybe too comfortable sometimes. What tools are available to make banking not just easy, but also safe?
Yeah, I'll give you three. One is, assuming your bank has these tools in their app or on their website, turn on account alerts. These are alerts you can set based on how much money gets taken out of the account, or let's say if a password gets changed, right? Chase has these. I hope your bank does too. They're really important. Make sure your child, your young adult, even you, has these things turned on.
Mm-hmm.
Now to get to two tools that make your life easier. Now that it's safe, two tools that make it easier. One is autosave. Building that savings habit is so important, but it's hard, right, to remember and also have the discipline to keep saving. So we created this thing called AutoSave. It essentially is a rule that you can set up to transfer a certain amount of money, can even be a buck, every X period of time, every week, every month, every time you get paid, whatever mm-hmm. works for you. You set it once and then you forget it. And what happens is the money automatically goes there. You don't need to think about it, and it just starts to accrue. And what a great option for kids
yeah.
who don't need to worry about thinking about it. The money just accrues. The final one for your older kids, they have questions about their credit score. We hear this all the time. So we have Credit Journey available to, yes, Chase customers, but also non-customers. You can check your credit score and find out very specific tactics about how to raise your credit score.
You mentioned the website where you've got a lot of resources that folks can utilize. Let's mention that again.
Your listeners can go to chase.com/student banking.
Again, Matt Gramata, head of family banking at Chase, about instilling these good money habits in our kids and using summer opportunities like summer jobs, you know, trips to Cedar Point, you know, whatever it might happen to be, cash for graduation, all of these things that happen during the summertime, leveraging that to instill good money habits in our kids. And it should be noted that obviously, Matt being with Chase, talking about some of the products and services that they offer, many banks also have similar programs and similar youth checking, youth banking options for their clients. Check with your institution, your financial institution, to see what options are available for you. It's today's Throwback Thursday.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
It's kind of an odd hit-and-run incident in New Jersey. An animal sanctuary was reportedly the site of a very strange accident. On Sunday, a car apparently drove into Uncle Neil's home animal sanctuary, destroyed a wall, flipped over, the driver caught on video, security video, fleeing the scene. The founder of Uncle Neil's Animal Sanctuary said the guy just left and abandoned the car, just left the car there, took off, leaving us to repair everything on our property. It was very weird. Fortunately, no animals or people appear to have been injured. Police are still investigating the crash. Very unusual hit and run at an animal sanctuary. Can you imagine the animals just... A shocker, that would be Sunday. This is kind of a weird story out of Olmsted County, Minnesota. A former Mayo Clinic doctor, Connor Bowman, has been accused of killing his wife last summer. That is not the funny. You know, again, in the broken news, we look for the odd and unusual, oftentimes humorous side of the news. There's nothing humorous about a man killing his wife last summer. But what is a little odd about this story, new information in the case alleges that Dr. Bowman was already on dating apps before she passed away. He was already on dating apps before. According to a warrant filed earlier this week, Dr. Bowman was searching for the proper term for being widowed. And one woman who matched with him on the Bumble dating app, again, this is before his wife died. Dr. Bowman told her he had received a large life insurance payout from his wife's death. That hadn't happened yet. Another woman claimed that Dr. Bowman and his late wife would have wanted him to move on. The problem is, she hadn't died yet. You would think that that would be kind of a basic thing. If you were going to off your wife, you'd wait until after to claim being a widow and going on dating apps. All of that. Not the brightest doctor in the world, apparently. We mentioned he is now a former doctor at the Mayo Clinic. Elsewhere, speaking of what would appear to be some level of incompetence, a Michigan deputy will not face charges after he accidentally left his gun in a school bathroom. Now that seems a little incompetent. The incident happened last month when the deputy was at the school teaching a safety class to students and left his gun in the school bathroom. If you're a cop, you never want to ask yourself, now, where did I leave my gun? The state of Michigan recently passed safe storage laws for guns. So there was some gray area as if to those laws could be used to charge the deputy in this case. The Kent County Prosecutor's Office says due to no student ever physically touching the gun, those laws do not pertain to the situation in this case, and the deputy will not be charged. But I don't know whether he still has a job as a deputy. It doesn't say that. But that would seem to be a bit of incompetence on the part of that deputy. In other broken news, a couple in Wisconsin is facing charges after allegedly getting overly romantic in the lobby of the county jail. They're getting busy with it in the lobby of the county jail. 28-year-old Desmond Cleveland and 67-year-old Karen Hill were caught doing what couples do in the waiting room of the Waukesha County Jail last week. Both are charged with disorderly conduct. Ms. Hill admitted to the act, and deputies say she told them that, hey, it happens. The mood strikes, and you just, you know. The county does not have a loitering ordinance for the jail, and there is no specific ban on that particular activity in the jail lobby, so disorderly conduct charges are the best that they can do, according to prosecutors. That's all that they can charge them with, disorderly conduct. The rules don't specifically prohibit it, so I guess it's game on. Let's see. Speaking of unusual sights, you see a lot of odd things on the streets of New York City, but a wild turkey is not usually among them. Apparently, according to a report in the New York Post, a wild turkey took a day-long trot through Manhattan to the amusement of onlookers. It is still not known how the feisty fowl, who was first spotted in Queens, managed to cross the East River into Manhattan, since turkeys generally can only fly for short distances, but it is believed that the bird took a shortcut over the Queensboro Bridge or used Roosevelt Island as a stopover. According to David Barrett, who runs a birding account on social media, this is a healthy bird that can fly 40 or 50 miles an hour, so she won't be easy to catch. As of this past Wednesday, yesterday, the turkey was still on the loose in Manhattan. As for its chances of survival, Mr. Barrett says there is a pretty good chance that the turkey will be just fine. Said the fowl can survive in Manhattan green spaces such as parks, where they can feast on insects and acorns. If nothing else, the city of New York has a new mascot. And finally, in the broken news this morning, to Florida we go, in Cape Coral, where a man with an apparent vendetta against his ex-girlfriend has been arrested for allegedly flushing her pet fish down the toilet, among other things. What did the fish ever do to make him want to take his life in such a heinous way? 28-year-old suspect Brett Dahl, according to the arrest report, broke into the house and got into a physical altercation with the victim before demanding she tell him where to find his gun. He proceeded to damage everything in sight on the kitchen counter, and eventually, you know, sacrificed the fish. He killed the fish. All told, Mr. Dahl is said to have caused about $3,500 worth of damage. Police eventually caught up with Mr. Dahl, who fled the scene in a friend's car. He was charged with grand theft, burglary, property damage, criminal mischief, obstructing justice, and animal cruelty. Flushing the fish. Flush his girlfriend's fish. I have no idea why he's her ex-boyfriend. He seems like such a stable individual. But you know what is really interesting is a litany of charges for the guy who flushed his ex-girlfriend's fish down the toilet. But for the couple that was getting jiggy with it in the jail lobby, only one single charge of disorderly conduct. Think about that. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Glentz with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We're coming up on the summer months, and this is a big time for reading. Great beach reads for the grown-ups and, you know, for the kids. The summer read program from the library is going to launch here in just a bit. So everybody is reading. It's a great time to read for pleasure. And according to a new survey of 2,000 American parents and children, 59% of kids, I love this, 59% of kids say they have better taste in their books, in the books that they read, than their parents do. 59% of kids say they have better taste in their books than their parents do. Also, one-fifth of adults think their child reads higher quality books than they do. So a fair number of adults even admit that their kids are probably reading better literature than they are. About 20%. On average, kids have been asked to read three books this summer. 35% are participating in a library challenge like the Summer Read Program, the Findlay Hancock County Public Library. 31% are reading along with their school class, get them ready for summer. 13% actually belong to a book club. It's kind of an interesting idea, a book club for kids. Common books found on assignment lists. And I remember when we were younger, we actually did have summer reading assignment lists from schools that teachers kind of expected us to read. Some of the common books found on assignment lists include Charlotte's Web, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and a book from the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. According to Barbara Hagen of Thrift Books that commissioned the survey, it's great to see that a majority of kids plan to complete a summer reading challenge this year, and also that kids are reading a fun mix of classic and contemporary books. So, in this survey, 70% of parents say that their child reads more than they do. 27% say their kid remembers more of what they read. And 78% of parents say that their kid inspires them to read more. So kind of interesting from this survey on summer reading. I love that the kids far and away, vast majority say that they read better quality books than their parents do. And 20% of the parents say, yeah, they do. So they are getting a new name, but the mission remains unchanged, and the organization traditionally known as the Boy Scouts gearing up for a summer full of fun and adventure. Rochelle Manley is Arrowwood District Executive, and Jenny Treese is Development Director here locally for the Boy Scouts, or I guess what Scouting America is the new name, or will become the new name here soon, right?
Yes, so Scouting America will take place in February officially, but we're going to start using the name now.
Okay.
And the goal is just to make our name a little bit more inclusive to everybody. It's been 5 years since we welcomed girls aboard to Scouting,
right.
And in that time, we've had over 6,000 females across the nation earn their Eagle Scout rank.
Wow. Any here locally?
We are at two in our council right now.
Two in this council.
And a third one is on the way.
One is on the way. Yeah, that is awesome. So, and like we said, the name is kind of a semantic thing. It is symbolic. Obviously, you want to continue to be inclusive and welcoming. But the mission, ultimately, is the same as it's always been.
That's correct. Yeah. Scouting America's goal will still be to continue providing young people fantastic experiences in both the outdoors and in the communities where they can grow and learn in a safe environment. That's what we've always been about, and that's what we're going to continue to be about. It's going to continue to prepare young people for lives of purpose and impact, and the mission will stay the same. And locally, we will still continue to have Cub Scouts for kindergarten through fifth grade. We'll have Scouts BSA or for youth that are 11 to 17 years of age. We're still going to have venturing crews. We have one here in Findlay for youth ages 14 to 21. And we'll still have the workforce community development with exploring. Mm-hmm. Those cover clubs from 10 to 14 years of age and youth. The posts are for 14 to 20 years of age.
Now, as you were mentioning, Jenny, it's been 5 years since the first girls joined what was the Boy Scouts and Scouting America now. But for those who are still, because this is still relatively new, these co-ed deals in the Scouts?
Yeah, so our Cub Scouts are co-ed.
Okay.
And they're called a family unit.
Okay.
And then once you join Boy Scouts, there's girl units and boy units.
You get a little bit older and you kind of separate that out. But again, they do similar things.
Absolutely.
And similar,
yep,
projects.
It's all scouting.
That kind of thing under the banner. But just kind of an interesting sidebar on that. As we mentioned, gearing up for a lot of stuff going on this summer. As a matter of fact, it's already started. One of the reasons why Mark isn't here is because he's at one of the big
national meetings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Currently, our scout executive Mark Hogan, Judge Mark Miller, and Sherry Garner Brumbaugh are in Florida at the national meeting. So we're excited to hear them come back and hear even more about the name change and what goes on behind it.
Yeah. So what is going on in the summertime? We look ahead a little bit to what's coming up here in the coming weeks.
So June 16th, we start the resident camp at Camp Lakota and at Camp Barry. Mm-hmm. This is our traditional week-long experience where scouts attend summer camp with local troops and earn merit badges and have fun. Starting on the 17th, the next day, we'll have the adventure camp at Camp Barry, which is our day camp out there for youth going into first grade to fifth grade. It's for boys and girls. It's mm-hmm. for scouts and non-scouters.
Okay.
So it's open to the community and they get to participate in a lot of cool things like swimming, boating, archery, fishing, and more. It runs from 8 a.m. to 4:15 p.m. daily. Lunch is included. There's before and after care if it's needed, and all the fresh air and activity is sure to guarantee that your kids are going to sleep better.
I was going to say, this is what most of us traditionally think of when we think of these scouting programs. It's these kinds of things that you do in the summertime. And I know it's a year-long thing, and people can join anytime during the year, but this is really what we identify with scouting.
It is. Yeah, the camping experience is always a great opportunity, and even kids that don't enjoy the traditional camping things have had a great time at adventure camp. I actually worked out there one summer, and it was just fun to watch them do new things that they've never tried before.
Mm-hmm. So I would imagine for those who are already involved in the scouting programs, they already have the information on signing up for the resident camps and for the adventure camps and all of that. For those who are not, as you mentioned, the adventure camps open to all. How do they sign up for that?
You can sign up on our website, and that's blackswampbsa.org.
Okay.
And also, just we're really active on Facebook, so you can check out our Facebook posts, and that'll link you to all of our registrations.
As we mentioned, the resident camp begins on the 16th of June. The adventure camps kick off on the 17th. Is there a deadline to register for these?
Really certain what the deadline is, but if they go on the website, it will tell them.
Okay.
I know that if they work with Drew DeMaul, our camping director, he will be able to help you with that too.
And I would imagine sooner rather than later is going to be the general rule of thumb.
Yes.
Yeah. As we mentioned, folks can actually join up anytime. I know traditionally when school starts in the fall, do a big push for membership, but you can sign up anytime.
Yep,
right?
Membership is all year round, and there are a lot of packs that do at least one or two activities. We also let them know things that are going on in the community that they can participate in, and they can join at any time by going to bscout.org and putting in their zip code, and they can find a pack or a troop that's near them.
And the other thing that I wanted to highlight, and I apologize, we skipped over this because we were talking about the camps and the facilities. Earlier this year, broke ground for new facilities
Camp Lakota. We actually broke ground for Cooper Lodge with the Keith Hubbard Dining Hall, and they did that during the Klondike Derby that was over in over there.
I remember those. Yeah,
it was freezing cold, but it was a lot of fun, and we broke ground, and we're hoping to have that open by the end of the year.
Okay. And it's been a long time coming, so we're really excited to have a new dining hall that'll house much larger groups of people and all the kids for the summer.
That is terrific stuff. And then looking ahead a little bit, when we get into the fall, I know you wanted to mention the popcorn sales. That'll be coming. It's still a ways off. I don't know anyone who's thinking of fall yet.
but we are gearing up for popcorn already. Yeah. So our units are thinking ahead, and they're working on making their commitments to sell popcorn and where they're going to sell popcorn. So it's just always something to look forward to. It's a really important way that our units earn funds for their scouts to help pay for their scouting year.
Again, Rochelle Manley with the Arrowwood District Director, Jenny Treese, Development Director for Scouting America. Got to get used to that new name. It's not official yet, but it will. And again, we've got a link up for more information about all of the programs, all of the things that are going on locally involving the Scouts. Ladies, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Again, our thanks to all of our guests for joining us this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Bookmark our site if you haven't already. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the fight over remote work. Employers want people back in the office, and some employees are even taking legal action to stop them. Do they have a case? And is there a happy medium? So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.